Hello, and welcome to Hacker Public Radio. My name is Ken Fallon, and this is the second in the series of LPIC. Today we're going to be talking about IRQ, DMA, ports, and first of all, pulses. Buses are a way to connect different components to your computer. The advantage of a bus is that it makes parts more interchangeable. So for example, you want to replace your graphics card, you simply take it out, open up your computer, take out the graphics card from its slot, and you put in a new one. Or if your computer doesn't come with a FireWire port, you might buy a PCI card supporting FireWire controller and you put it into your a free PCI slot. Now, a typical computer has several different buses. So connected to your CPU, you have a backside bus and then a frontside bus. A backside bus is connected to level 2 cache, and then that in turn is connected to the memory controller, which is connected to the RAM. So when the CPU wants to talk to RAM, it will first go along the backside bus. If it's in level 2 cache, it comes back very fast to the CPU. If it doesn't, it'll go to the memory controller and then out to RAM and come back relatively fast. Now, the advantage of this system is that the CPU and the backside bus typically run at the same speed, so you have very fast access times, and it means your memory can be very access to your memory can be very fast. Now, the other bus that's connected to the CPU typically, and there's typically it depends on the architecture of the computer you're talking about, is a frontside or a system bus. And that operates at a slower speed than the backside bus, but you know, quite fast nonetheless. Off the frontside bus, it has a connection, okay? It has a connection to the CPU. It also has a connection to the memory controller. It also has a connection to an AGP chipset. And it also has a connection to what's called a bus bridge, which I believe is the North Bridge. Now, this frontside bus will allow the very fast communication between the CPU and the graphics card. It won't be as fast as going over to the level 2 cache on the backside bus, but it's still quite fast. And it'll allow fast access to the RAM. Now, the point of the bus bridge is so that slower buses can be connected to the frontside bus, and that an example of a bus that would be connected to the North Bridge would be the PCI bus, for instance. And here you can put in your PCI devices, so they then would communicate at a slower speed to the bus bridge, which would communicate at a faster speed to the frontside system bus, which would communicate with the CPU. Connected onto the PCI bus is the South Bus Bridge, which will then connect to ISA devices like hard disks and whatever, or CD-ROM devices, which are typically a lot slower in relative terms. So you want to access something from a CD, it'll come into the ISA as an ISA device in via the South Bridge, along the PCI bus to the North Bridge, into the frontside system bus, into the CPU, and then go maybe out the backside bus through level 2 cache into the memory controller and onto RAM. It makes a lot more sense if you see it in a diagram, and hopefully I'll put a link to in the show notes to this diagram, which I'm actually taking from the really excellent How Stuff Works guide on introduction onto how to PCI works. In the IBM documentation, they refer to the PCI bus and the ISA bus, as well as AGP to a lesser extent. So let's have a look at the comparison between the ISA bus and the PCI buses. So the ISA bus is 16 bits wide, operates at a speed of 8 megahertz, and that translates to 16 megabits per second data transfer. If you think of bus width, there was 16 bits. If you think of that as 16 lanes along the motorway, and if you think of bus speed as the speed limit that data can transfer down that line, if you compare that to that 16 bits to the PCI bus, so instead of 16 lanes of traffic, we now have 32 bits, 32 lanes of traffic going along, and the original specification was a bus speed increase in megahertz from 8 up to 33 megahertz. That was a grand total of, instead of 16 megabits per second, up to 132 megabits per second. Now there's since been revisions of that where it's gone from a 32-bit bus width, they've doubled that up to a 64-bit, and they've gone from 33 up to 133 megahertz. So now the PCI-X standard 64 bits, 133 megahertz, and it provides data transfer rates of 1 gigabit per second. Now, at the time of the ISA standard was coming out and the PCI standard was out, 132 megabits per second wasn't fast enough for very demanding 3D graphic work like video games or computer aided design 3D rendering and that sort of thing. So a separate bus was developed called AGP, which is Accelerated Graphics Port, and this was developed by Intel. And that, following on from our diagram earlier on, that connected directly into the front side system bus. Now, I don't know about hardware, but I believe that the new PCI Express bus that's coming out is fast enough so that it'll take over from AGP. But all these things are in a state of change, so if you just get the concept of what a bus is, I think you're sucking diesel. Now, finally, Linux provides a command that will allow you to identify the PCI devices that are in your computer. And that command is called lspci. You know, if you go to a console on your PC, you should type in the following command: man space lspci. Now, the first part of that command is man, which is the manual command, which is give me help on this, or show me the manual for the following command. And the command itself is lspci. So when you do that, you'll get, and this is typical from a man command, you'll get into the name section, you'll get lspci, list all PCI devices, synopsis, lspci options, don't worry about that. And then this is the juicy part, the description. lspci is a utility for displaying information about all PCI buses in the system and all devices connected to them. By default, it shows a brief list of devices. Use the options described, blah, 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 blah. Okay, and it describes additional options. But this is your first use of the man command. Just pick out that much, and you do very well. To exit the man command, you typically type the Q key on your keyboard. Now, the next command that you're going to type at the console is lspci, and then press the Enter key. And here we'll see things, and this is going to vary from PC to PC, but I see stuff like host bridge, PCI bridge, USB controller, ISA bridge, IDE interface, multimedia audio controller, modem, VGA, Ethernet controller, that's my network card, FireWire, yada yada yada. Typically when you're troubleshooting a problem, this is a very good tool because it says, okay PC, what's connected? Okay, moving back to our textbook again, page 8, I/O ports. When the CPU needs to communicate with the peripheral device, it does so through an I/O port, or sometimes just simply a port. When the CPU wants to send data or control information to the peripheral, it writes to a port. When the device has data or status ready for the CPU reads the data or status from the port. Most devices have more than one port associated with them, typically a small power of 2, such as 8, 16, or 32. Data transfer is usually done a byte or two at a time. Devices cannot share ports, so if you have an ISA card, you must ensure that each device has its own port or ports assigned. Originally, this was done using switches or jumpers on the card. Sometimes later ISA cards use something called plug and play, and this is discussed in a later section. If you want to see what I/O ports are in use on our Linux system, we can do so by looking at the contents of a file in a special directory on your computer called the proc directory. That's at the very root of your directory tree. You'll have /proc/. Now, if you do an ls, first of all we'll do a man of ls, and we'll see this that ls lists directory contents, and the description is list information about files, which is enough to know what ls does. We'll quit now, and we'll do an ls space /proc/, and then press enter. And then there we see a load of numbers, and then we see things like CPU info, crypto, IO mem, interrupts, and IO ports, along with various other things. And the proc system is called a sudo. The proc directory is called a sudo file system. So it's not actually a file system, but it's just a way of getting useful information from the processor. Unix has this philosophy that everything is a file, so this is a nice place to, if you read these files, you will get information. So what we're going to do is we're going to use the cat command, and we'll again do the man space cat, and we'll see that cat concatenates files and prints on the standard input. We'll press Q to get out of the man program, and what that means is it's just a way to display text files. It's the simplest one. It also does other things which may or may not be discussed later on in the series. So we'll type cat space /proc/IO ports, and then press enter. Now a lot of stuff goes past, a lot of numbers, a lot of so we have memory addresses, then with a colon, and then two columns, memory addresses, colon is the column separator, and then on the right hand side we have what those are. So for example, if we look at memory address 0060-006F is the keyboard, and that is actually good because it's what it should be. So that's where you get information about the IO ports in use. So another thing we're going to need to know about is interrupts, and we're going to page 10 from our textbook. Interrupts. So how does a CPU know when the last output has finished or when data is waiting to be read? Usually this information is available as a status register, which may be accessible by reading one or more of the IO ports associated with the devices. Two obvious problems arise with this scenario. Firstly, the CPU has to spend time checking the status, and secondly, if the device has data coming from somewhere such as an attached modem, the data must be read by the CPU in a timely fashion, otherwise it might be overwritten by the next available data byte. The dual problem of not wasting unnecessary CPU cycles and ensuring data is read or written in a timely fashion are addressed by the concept of interrupts. Interrupts are also called interrupt requests or IRQs. When something happens in a device that the CPU needs to know about, the device raises an interrupt and the CPU temporarily stops whatever it's doing to deal with the situation. If you want to think of an analogy for this, I believe in the rural parts of the States, where they have the post boxes at the end of the road, that if you want to send some outgoing post or mail, you put your letters into the post box and you raise the flag at the post box. I'm not American, so I don't know if this is true, but I've seen it in movies, so correct me if I'm wrong. Anyway, if it doesn't work like that, pretend it does. So then your post office dude drives along in his or her van, and right, the Joneses, they don't have their flag up, so I don't need to worry about them. The Smiths don't have their flag up, I don't need to worry about them. But yeah, Joe Bloggs do, so they have the flag up, so I need to go and deal with whatever it is over there. And this essentially saved the PC, the CPU, having to go to the various different devices. So thinking in the in terms of the computer, it's going, in the original designs, it would go, keyboard, do you have anything for me? No. Mouse, do you have anything for me? No. Printer, do you have anything for me? No. Disk drive, do you have anything for me? No. Going from that to a system where it's, they don't, oh, there's a flag up there on the hard disk, so I'll go and deal with that. So essentially that's what an interrupt is. The funny thing about interrupts, though, is that you're only allowed to have 16 of them. And that's going from 0 to 15. And the funny thing about it is that interrupt 5 is shared between either the sound card or the second parallel port. Now, the reason you're only allowed to have 16 is because, yeah, who would need more than 16? But if you're thinking about it, well, okay, my PC has a lot more than 16 devices on it. So mice, keyboard, printers, modems, external disks, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so we now have 16 interrupts. So you're thinking, well, I can attach 16 devices to my computer. Well, yes and no. Some of them are reserved. So if we go through the list, 0 is the system timer, 1 is the keyboard, 2 and 9 shared are the video card, 3 is COM2 and COM4, interrupt 4 is COM1 and COM3, interrupt 5 is LPT2 or the sound card, IRQ6 is the floppy disk controller, IRQ7 is the parallel port 1, IRQ8 is the real-time clock, IRQ9 is redirected to IRQ2, so you actually don't have 15. IRQ10 is available, IRQ11 is available, IRQ12 is a PS2 mouse, IRQ13 is the math coprocessor, IRQ14 is the hard disk controller, and IRQ15 is available. So we're looking at a total of 1, 2, 3, 4 IRQ ports that were available. Okay, it's all very well. We now have the concept of an interrupt, and we've also got the concept of IO port. Now, just to sort of explain what these are and why they're used. So say I have a brand new expansion card. Doesn't matter whether it's a PCI or an ISA or whatever card, and I want to put it into my computer. So I've got my Acme Corporation ISA card. I need the CPU to be able to talk to that. So first of all, I'm going to need a free interrupt in order to get the CPU's attention, and then I'm going to need, at a minimum, to define a range of ports so that I can send data to and from the CPU. Now, what a port is commonly used in France as a term for a door. So if you think of it as a block of apartments, so all the apartments have got one address, so it's number 1 Main Street, and then under that, you go to number 1 Main Street, there you are, big block of apartments, and you go to port FFFF, high 000 cross, and there's a door, and you go in and you pass your package in, and you get a delivery receipt out, and then you go on your merry way. So that's a port. And if you think of an interrupt as the example of flagging the mailman down, or mailwoman, as the case may be. Okay, those are two things. Now, we already explained about the speed difference between an ISA bus type and a PCI bus type. Now, the maximum speed on an ISA bus type is 16 megabits per second, and for technical reasons, it would be 9 megabits per second. But You know, if you're sending out a print job, that's fast enough. So why is ISA, why has that more or less been replaced by PCI devices? And the reason for that is because these settings needed to be configured manually. And by manually, I don't mean, yes, later on there were programs that would come with the network card that would allow you to run a special program that would allow you to set these, the interrupt, for instance. The ports weren't too bad because you had a selection from where you could generally select a free port easy enough without having conflicts. Very important point to remember is ports cannot be shared between two devices. Each device must have its own port. This applies to DMA channels later, which we'll talk about later. And ISA devices cannot share interrupts either. So if you have an ISA device, you would actually go along with little jumper switches. So on the board itself there was two pins sticking out, and you would take a little jumper and you would put it over that and short the two pins, creating a circuit telling it it's interrupt, whatever the interrupt was. Now the problem is we had 16 interrupts, as you saw earlier on, but only a few of them were available. A few of them were shared with the sound card. So for example, interrupt 5, if you had a second LP line printer port, which was common in the days, or if you had a sound card, you couldn't use interrupt 5. You might be able to get away with interrupt 15. You might be able to get away with 10 or 11. But it was basically hell setting up those things. I remember going, spending a weekend with a mate of mine in work, going around resetting all the network cards to IRQ5. Sorry, IRQ15 from 5, because it was the only common denominator in all the network cards that we had. Because, of course, some of the devices would come and they would only allow you to set IRQ5 or IRQ15. So you didn't even have the choice of the additional other ones. Now, that was a pain in the wherever. So when PCI devices came along, they had a major advantage for me personally in that they had a thing called an interrupt handler, and that was a lot of the PCI buses shared one IRQ. So the CPU knew that the PCI devices, one of the PCI devices, had a wanted its attention, so it would go over there. The interrupt handler would see it's not the first one, it's not the second one, it's not the third one, but it is the fourth one, and then the fourth device would communicate over IRQ5. Then on the next occasion, when IRQ5 goes up, it might actually be the first device that communicates. So that was a major relief. There was a trouble period where some of the motherboards were coming with PCI devices and ISA devices. So you still needed to make sure that the ISA devices had their own IRQ set and ports, obviously, and that the PCI device didn't. Devices altogether didn't conflict with that chosen interrupt. Just general tip: if you have a computer now that has an ISA device, please don't use it. It's a keep it if you want it, a piece of history or whatever. But you're far better off getting a router like a WRT54G. It'll be faster and run silently. It's more energy efficient. And all of that good stuff, and have more power and be more standard and more modern, and you can pick them up relatively cheap. So now we've covered interrupts, we've covered ports, but there's another thing that we should discuss, and it's on page 11, and that is DMA. We mentioned earlier that communication with peripheral devices through I/O ports occurs a byte or two at a time. For fast devices, service interrupts could use a lot of the CPU capacity. A faster method is to use direct memory access or DMA, in which a few I/O instructions tell the device where in RAM to read or write data, and then the DMA controller provides hardware management of the actual transfer of data between RAM and the peripheral device. So, what this means is you have got a slow modem coming in with some data, and it's operating hyper fast, like rocket speeds, and you've essentially got data coming in on a modem at the speed of some dude taking a leisurely stroll down the park. So you don't want the CPU to be stopping from this lightning fast speed to take in these messages from the strolling dude. Here's part of the message. You wait, I'll go home and get the next one. I come back in and give you the next one. So what it does is, what the DMA allows you to do is tell that dude, go write directly here into this part of memory. So get your message, put it all into memory over there, stack it up in a row, and then we'll flag an interrupt, and then we'll tell the CPU, okay, CPU, there's a whole go of data over here. CPU goes over, reads all the data at once. That at least is how I think it works. Okay, moving on to plug and play. Plug and play means that you can connect a device or insert a card into your computer and it is automatically recognized and configured to work with your system. To be fully implemented, plug and play requires three things: a BIOS that supports it, the core utility that enables PMP and detects the PMP devices. The BIOS also reads the ESCD for configuration information on existing plug and play devices, and the ESCD stands for Extended System Configuration Data, and this is a file that contains information about the installed plug and play devices. You also need an operating system to complete the configuration process started by the BIOS. The plug and play automates several key tasks that were typically done either manually or with an installation utility, and those tasks are setting an interrupt and assigning direct memory access, assigning memory addresses if the card needs additional memory. So for example, sometimes you can, especially on laptops, have the video card uses some system memory instead of having its own onboard memory, and then that will be assigned and reserved for that. Then we also have the input-output configuration, and these settings define the ports used by the device for receiving and sending information. Now, Linux provides some tools that will allow us to see what's going on here. And in the textbook on page 13, he makes reference to ISA PMP tools, which on my Ubuntu Gusti Kubuntu installation isn't available. Neither is ISA PMP, neither is PMP dump, but LS PMP is available in the package PMP utils, and one aptitude install PMP utils later. If you run the command, you'll get three columns, 00 colon 00 up to 00 colon 0D, and then an identifier PMP 0C01 blah, and then a brief description of what they are. So I've got system board, PCI bus, system board, PS2 port, IBM enhanced keyboard. Essentially, everything is a plug and play device on the laptop, even though it's soldered on. So that is possibly a useful tool for you. And that's the end of this episode in the mini series on LPI certification for Hacker Public Radio. For feedback, corrections, or contributions on the series, please email me at ken.fallon@gmail.com. For general feedback on Hacker Public Radio, you can email feedback@hackerpublicradio.org. Remember, Hacker Public Radio is for the community and by the community. So if you'd like to do a show, a series of shows, or provide some other assistance, please email admin@hackerpublicradio.org. With that, I'd like to thank you for listening and wish you a very good day.
Thank you for listening to Hacker Public Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.